once we get to full capacity, actually the fiber is what where we anticipate the future of the market to be, because there's literally so many products, everything from building products to packaging products, floor tiles, car parts, and then there's a whole level of new technologies, because hemp can actually conduct electricity. So there's like nanosheet technology, then there's aspects like 3D printing, and it's really just limited by the imagination.
Hi, and welcome back to the Lancaster Farming Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Herlock, and on today's show, we're going to talk to Erica McBride. She's the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council, and we're going to hear about some of the things that hemp is used for. 25,000 different uses, they say. So we'll take a quick break and then jump right in. Stick around. Hey, today's podcast is brought to you by the Lancaster Farming Locator, your source for any kind of farming equipment, trucks, tractors, trailers, whatever. You can find it in the Lancaster Farming Locator. Check it out, lancasterfarminglocator.com. All right, thanks. Back to the podcast. Hello and welcome back. So we're here with Erica McBride.
Hi.
Could you introduce yourself for us?
My name is Erica McBride. I'm the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council and also the National Hemp Association.
So how did you get involved with industrial hemp?
Well, I've known about it and believed in it for a very long time, but I didn't start getting active in it until I met my fiance, who we're getting married on October 6th. And he wrote a book about the history of hemp in Pennsylvania.
Quick side note, his name is Les Stark, and his book is called Hempstone Heritage, and we're going to be talking with him next week on the podcast. Back to you, Erica.
And as I got familiar with his work and got more involved, it just sort of blossomed from there. It was about 5 years ago, and here we are today.
Great. I'm happy to be here. So last year at Ag Progress Days at Penn State, I heard you give a presentation on industrial hemp's economic potential. Can you talk about some of the uses of industrial hemp?
Yeah, you may have heard the phrase that they, you know, when they say that there's 25,000 different products that can be made with hemp, and it seems like that's pretty far-fetched and an exaggeration, but actually it's not. It's just one of those rare crops where the entire plant is useful. And there's so many different, there's three main categories to the hemp plant and what can be done with it. And one is on the nutritional side with the seed. The other is the fiber, which is good for all kinds of manufacturing and product development. And then you have your health and wellness on the with the CBD side. So all of those markets are yet to be fully developed and explored, but once we get to full capacity, actually the fiber is what where we anticipate the future of the market to be, because there's literally so many products, everything from building products to packaging products, floor tiles, car parts, and then there's a whole level of new technologies, because hemp can actually conduct electricity. So there's like nanosheet technology, then there's aspects like 3D printing, and it's really just limited by the imagination. And it's not so much that hemp is going to replace a lot of products, but hemp can be used to make existing products better, stronger, and more sustainable.
Can you describe some of the more surprising uses?
I was surprised to learn that it's used in the baffling of batteries in BMWs. So I thought that was pretty interesting. There's a flooring company that has been experimenting with replacing 5% of their wood pulp with hemp fiber, and they've discovered that by replacing just 5% of the wood pulp that they can increase the strength of their board by almost 20%. So, you know, typically when you think of hemp, you think of about paper and rope and sails, and really those are not the things that we're going to be doing in the future. And like I said, there's bioplastics, which I find to be an extremely exciting aspect of the industry that could be pretty revolutionary. A lot of those things are just in prototypes now, because as with everything else with the manufacturing of hemp, the supply chain has not been there in order to court the type of investment that's needed in the infrastructure.
How about as a disruptor? Do you see any industries that hemp could disrupt?
Well, it could definitely change plastics. By eliminating the need for using of petroleum products. So that side of the things is probably the closest to when you say disruptive. A lot of people think that we probably have like the timber industry against us because it can replace wood in so many ways, but we don't actually see it that way because, as I said before, it's not going to replace those products, but it's going to reduce the use of them by replacing a portion of it with hemp, which will make the product stronger and more sustainable.
So you're not replacing, you're enhancing.
Right. We're making existing things better. Now, in some things, like we could get to the point where paper technology could replace using wood for paper, and that would only make sense. But again, those industries that you know, it's as the population explodes across the world, the demand for products and the production of products. I mean, there are only so many trees on the planet, and at some point we're not going to be able to keep up. So we need to look to these alternative raw materials in order to be able to keep up with demand.
And this ties into the growing world middle class?
Well, particularly in India and China, there's a big uptick in the number of the population that is reaching middle class status, and that's a fantastic thing, but those people want products, and those products have to be made from raw materials. And this is where, as I said before, the sustainability becomes an issue. We can't make every table out of wood. We can't make everything that we're making now out of wood and still have any trees left over. And hemp is a viable alternative to that, either in, as I said, reducing the amount of wood that's used in a particular product, if not replacing it altogether, and being able to, you know, grow a hemp crop in 120 days versus the 10 years or so it takes to bring a pine tree to maturity.
How about as fuel? Can hemp be used as a biofuel?
It can. I've heard competing theories about whether that's practical or not. Some people say that it actually requires more fossil fuel to convert it into a biodiesel than it may be worth. And then I've heard other people say that no, that that's not true. But again, this is why we do need to continue the research phase of this. A lot of people say, you know, we've been growing this plant for thousands of years, what do we need research for? And this is why we need research for, because we're not looking to bring it back to, you know, make hand-woven clothing like our ancestors did. We're looking to bring it to manufacturing on a large commercial scale and to help in sustainability. So that research does need to be there, and biofuels is one of those things that we're really looking forward to being explored.
Okay, so let's say hemp is in full production. What would that look like from an acreage point of view? How many acres are we talking about?
It's very difficult to extrapolate that out, so I can just give you a couple of examples. The flooring company I talked about earlier, it's estimated that they would need somewhere between 10 and 12,000 acres to satisfy their demand of replacing 5% of their process. Another packaging company that we spoke to said, you know, it would be estimated that they would need about 7,000 acres. So that's just too small. Manufacturing in Pennsylvania that would, you know, require like 17,000 acres. Now, when you start talking about Ford and GM and the U.S. automakers, then you're talking hundreds of thousands of acres that would be required to satisfy them. And we do anticipate them doing that because they're doing it in Europe right now. BMW, Audi, Volvo, those manufacturers are already using hemp in their car parts. Ford, obviously, having built the first hemp car, is extremely interested in bringing that back, but they haven't been willing to do it until the supply chain is there. But now that federal legalization is right around the corner, we anticipate that that should come to fruition relatively quickly as soon as we can get the infrastructure in place to create the supply chain.
When you say car parts, what do you mean? I mean, sure, I know what car parts are, but What kind of car parts are we talking about?
Inside a door panel or an exterior door, there's a panel that's made out of a compression molding product. And it's part of the structure of the door, and it's also used in soundproofing. The hemp can be used in the upholstery, the dashboards, and the plastic parts. And as I said before, it also can be used as the baffling in the batteries.
How about construction? Can industrial hemp play a role in the construction industry?
Yes, that's a pretty exciting field and an area that I'm really looking forward to see blossom. Over in Europe, they routinely build with hemp. There's a department store chain out there called Marks & Spencer that built beautiful department store type buildings in a green environment using hemp. Currently, there are a couple homes in the United States that are built with hemp. And the product called hempcrete, which is simply a mixture of the hemp herd, which is the inner woody core of the plant, mixed with lime and water, creates the equivalent of a concrete block, except it's much lighter weight, it's breathable, it's fire resistant, mold, mildew, and pest resistant. So not only does it create a really great insulation barrier, but it also allows the home to breathe. Because while a lot of modern homes are really well insulated, the indoor air quality is very poor because there is no movement of air. The only downside to building with hempcrete is the cure time. So in a building project, once you put the hempcrete down, while it is solid within a couple of hours, it really takes several weeks, up to, you know, maybe 5 or 6 weeks before it's cured enough that you can put your final coatings on it. So that's not really that practical on a large scale. So what we're going to be looking to do is to make prefabricated panels that are produced in sections, left to cure, so when you take them to the construction site, they're ready for assembly right away.
And would that affect the price of the project?
These are all the price component are things that we need to explore and part of the research. All of the homes that have been built now out of hemp, all of the hemp herd has been imported from Europe. So right there, that made them more expensive. Once we have domestic production, the herd is actually a lot of times considered kind of a byproduct. The outer bast fiber is the most desirable for manufacturing, can be used for textiles, and has the higher dollar value, where the herd is used for animal bedding and mulch and stuff like that. So once that price point comes down, certainly lime isn't that expensive. It should be a relatively inexpensive building material. In addition to being green, there will be some additional cost for the prefabrication and then the transportation costs to get it to the job site. But when you look at other types of building products that are delivered that same way, I expect it to be price competitive.
How about as medicine? Can you talk about some of the medicinal uses for hemp?
This is sort of the most difficult aspect of hemp to deal with right now, mostly from the legality side of things. Certainly, it's been proven over and over again to have tremendous medicinal value for a whole manner of things, from everything from epileptic seizures to all types of neurological disorders, pain management, and then also things like PTSD and depression and anxiety. And the research on that is continuing. The difficulty is with the legality of it. Once we get federal legalization passed, then it's going to be up to the FDA to figure out how to regulate it. We're hoping that we can find the path to be able to just take the existing CBD industry and legitimize it and allow it to continue and not have it be dominated solely by big pharmaceutical companies. But GW Pharmaceuticals did just get FDA approval for their product called Epidiolex, which is a CBD product. So that's where the challenge is going to lie. But in the pure essence of what it is, it's just it's phenomenal how many different things it's been shown, at least anecdotally, to alleviate because it's an anti-inflammatory. And like I said, the research to that is ongoing, and I'm sure that a lot of the things that are now just anecdotal evidence will be proven out in clinical trials.
Okay. So what can farmers be doing now to make sure that they don't get the short end of the stick as the hemp industry grows?
That's actually a difficult question, because on the one hand, you do want to get in early, and I would encourage anybody who's interested to start now, but also start small, now with a small amount of acreage, because even as we've proven here in our second year, even on this one farm where we're at now, we have everything from utter failure to total success. So we are still in that learning phase, and we need to keep going with that and determine best practices and different things. The work that Penn State's doing with their nitrogen trials and things like that are going to benefit everybody in the long run. But what the other important aspect is to, you know, I would, like I said, start soon and get the experience in growing it, because even though you know, it's called a weed and it grows like a weed and it's relatively simple to cultivate, it's not like you just throw the seeds in the ground and you're guaranteed success either. There are considerations that have to be taken in. And the other thing is finding the market. You know, the last thing we want is for farmers to jump in and grow 100 acres and put it in the ground before they know where they're going to go with it or who's going to buy it. That would be a recipe for disaster. We're diligently working towards building an infrastructure so we can offer contracts to farmers so they know what they're getting into ahead of time. So obviously any farmers who have been growing last year, this year, and will be growing next year that have that experience under their belt will be the ones that we would like to contract with first because of that experience. And we'll, you know, be looking to primarily be focusing on the fiber and the seed, and then so the price per acre will be based on yields. So I'm encouraging of everybody who is interested to get involved, but to take it slow and steady and, you know, not have wild fantasies of some people come in thinking they're going to make, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars per acre. And while it is going to be a tremendous cash crop and a great rotational crop, and it will be much better than corn or soy, it's not going to be the be-all, end-all miracle crop either. So we need to build this industry slowly and steadily to ensure success for everyone.
Okay, so you're growing about 55 acres here in Ole, Pennsylvania. Did you have a buyer lined up for that before you planted it?
No, except for ourselves, because our intention is to bring a decortication facility here to Berks County. So our intention, and we do have some ideas of what we would like to do with the seed as well. So we've grown this for ourselves. We did it both for the educational purposes so we can find out what works, what doesn't work. We actually grew four different varietals here. Three of them did pretty well, and one of them was a total disaster. So we know to stay away. Don't buy ivory, anyone who's listening. So it's all part of the research thing, and our intention will be to harvest the seed, and then we're going to harvest the fiber and bale it, and we'll just store it until we have our facility ready.
How long will it keep in bales?
I don't know that there's a lifeline to it. Once it's baled and stored properly, as long as it doesn't get all moldy and icky, you're good to go.
What lessons did you learn about growing hemp this year?
Well, the one thing we did learn that I didn't know before was actually there's two things that I think might be important to any farmers that are listening is that everywhere we no-tilled, we did not have good success with that. The tilled fields did way better. Now, part of that could have been our technique. We didn't mow the dead grass away, and a lot of the seed just rotted because we had that tremendous amount of rain this year. That excess vegetation just rotted the seed away before it grew. There were stands of it that did get quite nice, but overall, we consider where we did the no-till to be pretty much a failure. And the other interesting thing that the Department of Ag actually pointed out to us is that they went and visited the fields across the state, that they have noticed that the fields that had corn planted in it last year are the best fields. So I don't know if it had something to do with the land preparation, or if there's some, corn doesn't take the same nutrients out of the soil that hemp likes, and that could make it a great match for rotation. But those are the things we'll try to prove out by doing more experiments next year.
You said earlier that every part of the plant can be used. Does that include the roots?
Yes. I actually had an Amish farmer at our field day on Saturday ask me about using the roots. The only use for the roots that I've heard of so far has been in making teas, but it's not, so while it can be used, I haven't seen it widely be used, mostly because of the logistics of extracting it. Most people just, chop the stalks down. So the Amish farmer said that, maybe like a potato machine that pulls potatoes out could pull the root ball out, and I thought that would be a very interesting thing to experiment with. So the roots would probably be the least useful part of it, but there are uses for that as well.
What else would you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, there's so much to say. I don't know. It's like, because you can just tend to go all over the place with it because there's, like I said, there's so many different aspects of it that are worthy of being explored. But I'm super excited to see it being done here in Pennsylvania. When the program started out, we were a little disappointed that it started out so timid. But I have to give Secretary Redding props. He was right, and he actually did do us a favor by putting the reins on us a little bit the first year. Because as we're finding out, even in the second year, there is still a lot to learn. I've been extremely impressed with the level of enthusiasm and interest in hemp. And like I said, the most important thing now is to get the farmers to start growing it, to get the experience. But the most important thing is the infrastructure, because without an outlet for the farmers to take the crop to, that this is all for nothing. So hopefully, if everything goes as planned, well, while we were hoping to have it done for this year, things don't typically go as planned. but we really, really want to have a fiber processing facility here for next year. So actually going to Canada in a couple weeks to go look at some new technology that they have up there for fiber processing, and looking to bring that here so we can start contracting farmers to actually grow it. And the other thing that doesn't get talked about a lot is the actual nutritional value of hemp, which is another area. It's the easiest point of entry for farmers, because if you grow seed varietals like they were growing at the Penn State trials, they'd only get to be 3, 4, maybe 5 feet tall, and they can be harvested quite easily with traditional farm equipment. And it can also be handled and processed by other existing seed processing companies. Any company that can handle, like canola seed, can handle hemp because they're similar size seeds. The protein level in hemp is fantastic. It's the most easily digestible vegetable protein, and it has an omega 3, 6, and 9 profile that's relatively perfect for the human body, relatively similar to fish oil. So that's a whole huge part of the equation that I think needs to be explored. And we're also looking to see about getting some dehulling machinery here in Pennsylvania so we can start manufacturing food products. And I think, well, if you go to any health food store now, you can buy hemp seeds off the shelves, and they typically run, $8, $9 a pound. And I think we can bring that down significantly, because it really is something that should be a part of everybody's diet, because it is that nutritious that a lot of people call it a superfood. It's far superior than soy in its nutritional value and its protein content. And we would like to see hemp appear in more nutritional products. And like I said before, the fact that we don't really need to invest in a whole lot of infrastructure to make that happen makes it a logical starting place for farmers just getting into it for the first time.
Can you talk about the harvesting equipment that does or doesn't exist here in the U.S.?
It does exist. There's not a lot of it. And there's different ways you can do it. Like I said, seed crops, traditional harvesting equipment can work. The way we did it last year is we just
We basically mowed it down and then we baled it. There's specialized combines. The problem is when you start growing the fiber varietals, they can get to be 15, 20 feet tall. So a traditional combine is never going to reach that height. But what they have is a specialized combine that's on hydraulic heads, so it's laser driven, so it measures 18 inches down from the top of the crop and it cuts the seed head off, and then it strips the leaves, and then it cuts the stalks into equal sections. And then you let that lay in the field for a little bit to what we call ret, which starts to break down the lignins before you bale it into the large square bales, and then those bales are taken to the decortication machine. So the balers are okay, from what I understand from talking to Rodale, like there's some slight modifications to the baler to make sure that the fibers don't wind around and seize the motor is all it takes. Everybody here that has harvested so far has used a traditional combine. In Canada, when they first started, they basically started with those types of combines as well. Like if you put PVC piping over some of the internal structures that rotate, it stops the fiber from winding around it, and that's been a relatively easy jury rigging to get things to work.
Classic farmer solution.
Exactly. And there's been a lot of interest in Pennsylvania in looking at equipment and modifying equipment and producing new equipment. So while there is equipment in Colorado, you know, one or two pieces of the more higher tech farming equipment, we'd certainly like to see it produced here. We have New Holland, you know, we have a lot of innovative people that this would kind of be right up their alley. So it can be done with existing machinery. It can be done better and more efficiently with newer machinery.
How do you feel about the work that Mitch McConnell has been doing in terms of hemp?
I'm very, very pleased with what he's done for the hemp industry, obviously. You can't be supportive of hemp and not be appreciative of the hard work that Mitch McConnell has put into it. If it were not for him, we wouldn't be this close to getting
industrial
it passed.
Hemp.
And it is going to
industrial
pass, and
hemp.
It is going to pass in this 2018 Farm Bill,
industrial
and that in
hemp.
Large part is due to Mitch McConnell. So for that, I am grateful.
Are you confident that Pennsylvania can be a major player in the national hemp industry?
I am, but that would be a whole lot more insured and happen faster if we could get some better support from the administration as far as matching monies for infrastructure goes. New York is offering matching monies, and they, you know, are looking to install a decortication facility and have been sort of courting us to do it there instead of here, but we're Pennsylvanians and we live here and we want to do it here, and we're determined to do it here, but a little extra assistance on that side, on the financing, would be extraordinarily helpful. It's hard to turn away matching money.
Okay, Erica McBride, thank you very much for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And if anybody is interested in more information and participating in the 2019 hemp program, please feel free to visit our website for the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council at www.pahic.org, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions. And also, if you're interested in hemp programs in any other state, you can reach us at the National Hemp Association, which is www.nationalhempassociation.org, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have on the national level as well.
All right. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening. And remember, we are on iTunes. You can click subscribe. You won't miss anything. Also, give us a review. Give us a few stars. Tell us what you think. And if you have any questions that you want answered about hemp, or if there's anything farming related you want to talk about, send me an email at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Okay, until next time, we'll see you in the newspaper.